This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of October 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 4th of October 2012, which this week has been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Our readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Claire Caffrine.
Hello.
And Pam Tilbury.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcement this week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 5th of October, the sun rose at about 7:15 in the morning and will set at 7:25 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, that's the 10th, the sun rises at about 7:20 in the morning and will set at 6:25 in the evening. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. There's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines in the paper this week are End of the Road for Barton Farm, Wind Farm Protesters Say Keep County Green, and 9 City Jobs Saved After JJB's Collapse. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
End of the Road for Barton Farm. Knockout blow to campaigners as Pickles approves 2,000 homes on farmland. Campaigners battling plans for 2,000 homes on the edge of Winchester look to have suffered a knockout blow. On Tuesday, the government approved the Carla Homes scheme for Barton Farm, the biggest single housing scheme in the city's history. Save Barton Farm, the main campaign group, will now be considering legal action to challenge the figures for housing on which planners have relied. Campaigners say that as well as the loss of farmland, the extra homes will bring pressure to local infrastructure, bringing traffic chaos to congested roads. But the scheme will ease the city's housing crisis, as some 800 homes will be for rent to people currently on the City Council waiting list. As well as the homes, Carla proposed a primary school, a food store, community building, health centre, 60-bedroom nursing home, a district energy centre, park and ride for up to 200 cars and allotments. It also wants to divert the Andover Road north through the new estate. The government decision only approves outline planning and detailed proposals have still to be approved. Gavin Blackman, chairman of the Save Barton Farm Group, said, "We are carrying on. We are bitterly disappointed, but not surprised given the pressure the government is under to kickstart the economy. But we are surprised at the timing just before the public inquiry into the local plan at the end of October." Mike Emmett, director of Carla Homes, who has promoted the scheme for more than a decade, said, "I'm really pleased." He declined to discuss possible legal action from the Save Barton Farm Group. In a statement, Carla added, "We welcome the appeal decision and now look forward to continuing to work with the City Council and local community to deliver a high-quality development. Local people will benefit greatly from this decision. It will be a major contributor to stimulating the local economy and creating long-term jobs. Furthermore, it will make a significant contribution to the chronic shortage of affordable housing, enabling key workers and other local people to live in their own city. City Councillor leader Keith Wood said, "Personally, I am disappointed that the time has come to release this site for housing. But the Secretary of State has applied his own rules and we have no choice but to follow them. We argued strongly about the application, but we have been overtaken by events. The council now needs to ensure that the development of this site generates all the promised benefits to the community. We plan to set up a forum to help ensure that the development minimises the disruption to Winchester residents and the infrastructure requirements are implemented properly and promptly."
Wind farm protesters say, "Keep County Green." Wind turbines taller than Battersea Power Station's chimneys will tower over the Hampshire countryside if plans are given the green light, protesters have warned. EDF Energy wants to build up to 17 wind turbines, each up to 126 metres, that's 413 feet tall, on a farm at Bullington Cross, north of Winchester, at a cost of £50 million. According to the energy giant, the wind farm, which would be the largest in Hampshire, could generate enough electricity for the average annual needs of 15,800 homes, about a third of Winchester District. The Janaways of Upper Norton Farm have farmed the land for generations, but plans to build the wind farm have split the rural community. It's farmer versus farmer. Douglas Patterson of neighbouring Cranbourne Farm and Hunton Grange Farm is leading a protest group, Keep Hampshire Green. Campaigners say the turbines would be taller than the chimneys of Battersea Power Station, 338 feet, and add to the industrialisation of the landscape. Mr. Patterson, a dairy and arable farmer, said, "We've also been offered turbines on three different occasions, but told the energy companies to take a running jump. Landscape has always been my greatest passion." Mr. Patterson, who is also chairman of the Deaver Society, which battled plans for Mitchell Dever Newtown, said, "Farmers had a duty to protect Britain's ancient, rich and green landscape for future generations." Asked to comment, Andrew Janaway said he had signed a confidentiality agreement with EDF Energy. In a statement approved by the energy company, Mr. Janaway said his farm was one of the few sites in Hampshire capable of hosting a wind farm. The farmer said, "We are committed to reducing our carbon footprint. Along with many others locally, we recognise that addressing climate change is key for us all and see this as an opportunity for the county to do its bit." Tensions are rising, and more than 120 people packed a heated question and answer session with EDF energy officials organised by the Wanston Parish Council last Saturday. At one point, a PR official for EDF Energy attempted to stop the Hampshire Chronicle from taking photographs, even though it was a public meeting. Several villagers challenged the energy company's claims of electricity output and carbon savings. Other concerns included the giant turbines being a blot on the landscape, visible for miles, noise, and falling property prices. Glyn Harvey, who lives in Sutton Scotney, said the latest research in Germany, which is ahead of the UK in renewable energy, showed wind farms only produce 17% of the energy predicted. Darren Cumming, onshore wind development manager, defended the green technology, adding it was government policy to build more wind farms to reduce carbon emissions. He said Bullington Cross, which stands 100 metres above sea level, was an excellent site for a wind farm because of its good road links, ecology and relatively few homes nearby. Mr. Cumming said modelling suggested background traffic noise would be greater than the wind farm on the majority of occasions. Bullington Cross is near the busy A34 and A303.
Nine city jobs saved after JJB's collapse. 9 jobs in Winchester have been saved following the collapse of JJB Sports chain. In all, 80 staff at stores throughout Hampshire have been made redundant after the retail group went into administration. Administrators closed 133 stores on Monday and agreed to sell 20 remaining outlets, including Winchester, to Mike Ashley's Sports Direct International. The Winchester High Street store was this week staging a closing down sale before shutting for rebranding as a Sports Direct store. A spokesman for Sports Direct said the shop would definitely reopen at a date to be announced. On Tuesday, staff at the shop declined to discuss the situation with the Hampshire Chronicle. The Sports World parent bought the stores, the JJB brand and its website for £23.8 million in a deal that will protect 550 jobs in the UK, including its warehouse. But the agreement was a worse than expected outcome for JJB staff, as Sports Direct was reportedly hoping to safeguard up to 1,500 jobs and buy up to 60 stores. David McCorkadale, corporate finance partner at KPMG, who led the sales process, said the level of cash and further operational restructuring required to rescue a more substantial part of the business was too much risk for the firm. The saving of the Winchester store will please local business chiefs. Recently, Paul Morgan, director of Warren's Stationers on the High Street, said whenever national chains collapsed, the Winchester branch never seemed to be rescued by the administrators, citing Clinton Cards, Game and Pastimes. And recently, nearly 2,200 jobs have been lost across the country.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements, which will then be followed by Christian comment. Downing, Joan Downing, at the Dower House on the 30th of September, aged 88. Findon, Henry, known as Harry Findon, on the 23rd of September. Hallett, Pamela Joy Hallett, at Moorside Nursing Home on the 28th of September, aged 81. Hamilton, Tom Hamilton, in hospital on the 1st of October, aged 80. Hartley, Christopher John Hartley, in the Ashley Manor Nursing Home on the 23rd of September, aged 86. Robson, Mary Margaret Robson, on the 22nd of September, aged 87. Thompson, Alan Roger, known as Rog Thompson, at home, aged 67. Trussler, Tom Trussler, in hospital on the 30th of September, aged 94.
Christian comment this week is written by Mary Gray, and it's headed "A Peacemaker for Our Times." Francis of Assisi, whose feast it is today, has always been special for our family. We've camped with our children in the olive groves just outside Assisi. We were even in the Duomo, the cathedral of Assisi, the night before the earthquake struck and the famous Giotto frescoes were damaged. Francis' story still seems very alive in Assisi. The values he stood for, simplicity, love of the poor and peace, were well captured by Zeffirelli's film Brother Sun and Sister Moon. In one scene we saw bishops at High Mass in the Duomo, with rich vestments and jewel-encrusted fingers, but the cathedral was empty. Where were the people? Down in the valley, at the church of San Damiano, with St. Francis and St. Clare, with the chickens, goats and guitars, very hippie and ahistorical, but something of the flavour of the appeal of Francis the troubadour, Il Poverello, the little poor man, was well captured. But how does this help us today, beset as we are, with seemingly irreconcilable conflicts in the Middle East, Afghanistan and elsewhere, as well as the fact that Islamic faith has been deeply offended by the recent film The Innocence of Islam? Francis did not flee from such conflicts. In fact, during the Crusades in 1219, when Christians were fighting the Saracens, the Muslims, for the holy places in Jerusalem, Francis visited Sultan Malik al-Kamil in Egypt. While the Crusaders were besieging that town, St. Francis and a companion bravely crossed over the lines and were eventually brought before the Sultan. Francis refused to be the enemy of anyone. He regarded all people as his brother or sister in Christ. This transparent holiness communicated itself to the Sultan, and after several weeks, he developed a real affection and respect for St. Francis. To this day, Franciscans have responsibility for caring for the holy places. The interfaith gathering at Assisi in 1986 recognised Francis and Assisi's wider role in world peace, with justice and peace between the religions. But there is a still further consequence. The encounter between Francis and Sultan Malik took place at Damietta in Egypt, and today Franciscan sisters are very committed to the Damietta Peace Initiative. This is a Franciscan, interfaith-driven peace enterprise for Africa, built around the Francis core values of non-violence, reconciliation, and respect for all creation. It is an inspiring response to the conviction of many that the sectarian divisions in our society must give way to larger, shared human questions, especially the urgent need to live in harmony with each other and with nature. This is the message of Francis for today.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do this either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, by emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's Hampshire Chronicle is all one word, that's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can do it in the traditional way by writing a letter to the editor and sending it to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
Leonard Preston writes on a matter of taste. Sir, can I be alone in feeling, and viscerally at that, that Winchester Cathedral's reputation is more markedly on the slide this year than ever, which is saying something. Not content with its annual market of Christmas tat despoiling and thronging the close, the Whore of Babylon now has sub-Blackpool illuminations atop its nave. Might I suggest the cathedral authorities set about finding a new events manager as a matter of urgency? Someone with a little taste, perhaps. Leonard Preston, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
My first letter this morning comes from Jeff Ward, and the heading, it seems, Stanmore is always suffering. Sir, once again decisions are made affecting Stanmore by people who have no connection. It is no real surprise, according to reports I have seen, that one of only two councillors to vote in favour of the scheme was Jamie Scott, who is a Stanmore resident. Anyone who has taken the trouble to read the report submitted to the Planning Development Committee, a real struggle I will admit, will see from the outset that the submissions had no real chance. I have rarely seen such casuistry with reference to long-distance views and vistas, particularly to the proposed store. There are no long-distance views in this part of Stanmore unless it is our erstwhile neighbours in Badger Farm, who perhaps don't like the idea of looking out over the roof of a convenience store. Despite the best efforts of Bargate Homes, who have submitted revised applications, it seems we are now to be subjected to the progressive continuous dereliction of the site until the venerable burghers of Winchester decide what to do with it. It seems that Stanmore is always suffering in terms of resources. Witness, for example, the dreadful state of dilapidation of the traffic calming measures in Stanmore Lane. I understand that one of the benefits of the scheme would have been an improvement to these totally inappropriate measures. It is a shame we don't get tourists. Perhaps we would then get as fair a share of the resources as the rest of the city district we belong to. It is also a shame Stanmore is not a separate parish, as are some of our neighbours. Until that happens, it will always be at the bottom of the heap for resource allocation. And that comes from Jeff Ward, Wharton Place, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter is from A.P. Lodge, and it's entitled, Exclusion Zone is Quite a Comment. Sir, now that the season of excellent country shows and village fetes is behind us, I'm left with just one query. What did the organisers of the Eastern Village fete mean by their notices which said, no riffraff? I did a double take when I saw the notice, and no, there was no exclamation mark to suggest light-heartedness. They meant it. Was I good enough to go to their fete, I wondered? Should I go back and change into something smarter? Would my cider-drinking country cousins be banned at the gate? They, after all, are true country village people, but today their children think themselves lucky if they can manage to rent something on an estate in the local town. All in all, I felt it was quite a comment, and a sad one, on the takeover of villages by the wealthy. They ought to be a little kinder. After all, don't they want at least a few poor people for their cleaners and gardeners? I invite the organisers to comment. AP Lodge, Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
And a letter from Jocelyn Penbull about the wind farm. Sir, the government is committed. Parliament, in a moment of collective delusion and insanity having passed the legislation, to providing 12,300 megawatts of power from renewables by 2012. Even if the 30,000 turbines needed were to be built, their erratic contribution would be negligible. At one time, during August, 3,500 turbines contributed 12 megawatts to the 38,000 megawatts used. The new Electricity Trading Agreement website, which carries official electricity statistics, registered this as a contribution of 0.0%. EDF intends to build 17 turbines, dominating the Hampshire countryside and costing, according to EDF at a meeting in Sutton Scotney on Saturday, £50 million. These turbines are inefficient and uneconomic. Instead of sacrificing our landscape and pursuing policies which will bring us fuel poverty, we should be building nuclear power stations. At extraordinary cost, this nation throws good money after bad on a project which, as recognised on mainland Europe, is doomed for failure. EDF anticipate applying for permission later this year. It was revealed at the meeting that evidence suggests wind speeds at Bullington are at the bottom of the range at which a turbine can be expected to operate. EDF were asked why it was chosen if the wind is potentially so unsuitable. No answer was forthcoming. However, the answer is clear. The government intends to dump 30,000 of these monsters upon us, and for them, it does not matter where. We must demonstrate that we will not tolerate this costly and useless project being imposed upon us. I am delighted that my political opponent, our excellent MP Steve Brine, is actively involved in this matter, and with his help, we shall see EDF off. Jocelyn Penbull, Chairman UKIP, Winchester, Hunton Down Lane, Hunton, Winchester.
W.A.C. Halliwell writes a letter headed Cathedral Appeal, not very well timed. Sir, at a time of countrywide austerity, when many households are feeling the pinch and some facing actual hardship, it seems the appeal by Winchester Cathedral for £19 million, as reported in the Chronicle on September the 27th, is somewhat ill-timed. I am at one with the Dean and Chapter in the matter of maintaining the structure and fabric of the cathedral for future generations. But it would be interesting to know how much of the £19 million is required for this purpose. It might reasonably be thought that the other stated purposes are peripheral. It would be of interest too to learn on what authority the leader of the County Council has seen fit to pledge £1 million of taxpayers' money for the purpose of this appeal. Surely there must be calls on such funds for the benefit of the residents of Hampshire as a whole, which might be considered to take priority. And that comes from W.A.C. Halliwell, St. James Villas, Winchester.
How drivers failed a damsel in distress. Driving out of Downs Road, South Wanston, on September the 24th, whilst taking my two younger children to school, my car suddenly broke down and would not restart. Feeling anxious and helpless, I was on Christmas Hill, a busy road, particularly during the school run. My priority was to move my car and children to a safer place. But I still can't believe how many cars happily passed by, seemingly ignoring my vulnerability. A situation I inadvertently found myself in had become potentially life-threatening. Some minutes passed and a car did pull over. The driver was a professional health worker who came to my aid. Thank goodness I was assisted by such a kind and helpful man, and I would like to say a big thank you to him. But what a shame that so many other drivers, some of whom lived close by, simply continued on their way, giving me dirty looks and hand signals. I've lived in South Wanston for the past 3 years and would not have assumed, before my experience that morning, that so many drivers lacked support for other road users. I'm sometimes ashamed to be British. And that was from Mrs. S.T. Cardy, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
Now a letter from Keith's story about our Winchester MP. Sir, I'm writing in response to Mrs. Joyce Peacock's letter seeking enlightenment on the subject of the apparently high expenses of Winchester's MP, Steve Brine, Chronicle, September 20. I believe the explanation is that Steve Brine costs more because he does more. Nobody who follows our MP's activities throughout the district and in Parliament could fail to be impressed by the scope, depth and sheer volume of his work. Whether it is dealing with tenants' problems, supporting local businesses, fighting insensitive developments, encouraging participation in sports, campaigning for our local hospital and educational services, or playing a leading role at Westminster on behalf of those affected by breast cancer or autism, he provides good value for money. I've known 4 Winchester MPs, and he is simply the best. A rare example of a full-time MP with no independent source of wealth, who lives in modest circumstances with his young family and who reaches the parts of his constituency that other MPs don't. quite a contrast with neighbouring Eastleigh's Lib Dem MP, who is a multi-millionaire and appears to spend much of his time defending his reputation. As for his expenses, they simply reflect the cost of so much contact with constituents, including running a modest but very welcoming drop-in office in Stockbridge Road for those he serves. To me, what matters is whether we get good value for our money, and a high-cost person or product may be the best value. I'm reminded of the time when I managed a business in the USA. My West Coast marketing manager always had the highest expenses, but he was also the most productive and the best value for money, just like Steve Brine. Keith Story, Winchester.
Rachel Aaron writes a letter headed Late Evening Bus Service Welcomed. Sir, I'm writing on behalf of Stanmore Community Association to thank Winchester Town Forum for funding a late evening bus service between Winchester City Centre and various outlying communities, including Stanmore. We firmly believe Winchester needs comprehensive bus provision, including an evening service. This is appreciated in Stanmore for a number of reasons, not least because of the high proportion of people who do not have access to a car. As a non-political community group serving the residents of Stanmore, we are delighted with this development and always welcome engagement with the county and city councils and the town forum in working towards improvement in public transport in the area. And that comes from Rachel Aaron, Acting Chairman, Stanmore Community Association.
Arthur Stitt writes about an uplifting exhibition. Sir, I would like to say how much I recently enjoyed the Winchester Art Club exhibition at Winchester Discovery Centre. The quality of many of the exhibits was very high and a delight to look at. Comparisons are odious, but may I single out Peter Folks, Tricia Spink, George Finch, paintings, and Valerie Tierney, hand-dyed silk. I was also bowled over by the quality and variety of Rachel Thompson's sketchbook. I have never seen a sketchbook by a living artist before and was mightily impressed. What a wholly delightful exhibition it was. I spent two happy hours looking and came away feeling uplifted. Arthur Stitt, I'm sorry, well close, Wootton, St Lawrence, Basingstoke.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to the items of historical interest. And we have extracts from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. The 200-year item continues the theme that we were on last week, which was the defeat of Napoleon's army in Russia by the Russian forces.
200 years ago, 1812. On the 20th of July was concluded at St. Petersburg a treaty the most ample and expressive of union, friendship and alliance, defensive and offensive, against the Emperor of the French, the Emperor of the Russians and the Catholic King of Spain, Don Ferdinand VII. By an express article, the extraordinary Cortes, now assembled in Spain, and the constitution sanctioned by them, are acknowledged as legitimate. The ratifications of the said treaty are to be exchanged within 3 months.
And 100 years ago, 1912, the Corn Exchange skating rink was reopened for the winter season on Monday. Attendances during the week, especially of learners, clearly showing that as a pastime, rinking has lost none of its popularity. The rink has again been leased by Mr. R. Chisnell, who may be relied upon as heretofore to do everything possible to ensure the pleasure, convenience and comfort of the patrons of the rink.
In 1962, which was 50 years ago, Winchester City Council, faced with moves to redevelop important shopping areas of the city, quashed two applications which would have resulted in substantial alterations to high street landmarks. Sainsbury's were seeking permission to carry out a major reconstruction of their store, while Northampton Town and Country Building Society received little support in their request to alter number 32, the Pentis, in High Street, for use as a banking hall, display area and office.
At now 25 years ago, 1987. Following a spate of 11 car thefts or break-ins in Winchester this week, police warned owners to be vigilant when parking their vehicles for the night, or indeed at any time. People should not leave anything of obvious value in their cars, a spokesman said at the North Wall station this week. Police are increasing the number of officers on patrol to be on the lookout for car thieves. The 11 thefts and break-ins took place in the centre of the town on the night of September 28, 29.
And next we have the Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by First Person.
The Chronicle headline this week is, "If not Barton Farm, where else?" Carla Holmes' staff were cracking open the champagne on Tuesday after the government backed their scheme for 2,000 homes at Barton Farm. Their joy at getting planning permission to develop the 230-acre site on the edge of Winchester is understandable. It will bring the developer a multi-million pound profit. There is no doubt that the 800 homes that will be available for rent to people on the City Council waiting list will be a major boost to tackling social inequalities in the city. But the key question remains, is this the right place for the homes? And if not, at Barton Farm, then where? The tireless Save Barton Farm group are taking legal advice and will continue to argue about the flaws in the 4,000 figure for the number of new homes proposed for Winchester over the next 20 years. The group also stress that future land windfalls should be taken into account and cite the ideas of snug projects that, with some imagination and lateral thinking, could see hundreds of homes fitted into such places as Bar End. These are important points that deserve detailed examination, which makes the timing of the decision just weeks before the public inquiry into the new local plan rather unhelpful.
Khalid Aziz is writing as First Person this week, and he is saying, "We are all plebs these days. We are all plebs these days. Gone are the days when the rich man was in his castle and the poor man at his gate, and probably a good thing. But in Roman times, things were much simpler. You were either a patrician, someone who owed their place in society to heritage, or a plebeian of the common people. There was soon added a third category, proletariat, those without property, a sort of pleb-lite. So in essence, being a pleb is being middle class." Andrew Mitchell is the son of David Mitchell, formerly MP for North West Hampshire, and on the few occasions I have met him, a decent enough fellow. He was a wine shipper and merchant before becoming an MP, so hardly qualifies as patrician. Mitchell the younger became a millionaire via a stint at Lazard's, but it is new money, not heritage, which gives him his status. So clearly, we had a case of one pleb allegedly calling another pleb. These days, most policemen are of the property-owning classes. A pleb. Of course, how much you take any of these sobriquets as an insult is all about perception. Take racial labels. Not many people call me Pucky to my face these days, but there was a time. And there was a time, too, when I perceived it as distinctly threatening. One classmate who plagued me and others with racist language has since done time for racially aggravated offences. However, I do stand accused of referring to the Dutch as cloggies. But for me, it's a term of endearment, just as I might refer to Aussies. Although woe betide you suggesting to the average Aussie that he might have a little abo in his heritage. The N word has now been all but expunged from the English language. I grew up with a paint box containing a block of nigger brown and the nursery rhyme eeny, meeny, miny, moe, etc., which was good enough for Rudyard Kipling to put into print. These days, the word is so outré that since the turn of the century, whenever ITV screens the 1955 version of the Dam Busters, Wing Commander Guy Gibson, in the shape of Richard Todd, goes mysteriously mute every time he calls his faithful Black Labrador. Clearly, a VC doesn't trump political correctness, even when dramatically recalling a bygone age. I'm not sure when all this came about, but probably when we started calling Peking, Beijing, and Kenya, Kenya. And yet, the N word is alive and well. Travel to black cities like Chicago, and you hear it all the time, and in public too. And of course, it's okay when it's part of modern hip-hop culture. Tune in to any one of scores of music channels and you will hear the word, or more likely its derivative, nigger. In the end, perhaps we need to calm down. After all, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
It was worth it, say down protesters. 20 years ago, they fought to save a Winchester beauty spot from becoming a motorway. Although scores of local people were unable to stop Twyford Down being sliced through for the M3, they came together last weekend to remember their efforts. Around 50 people turned out at St Catherine's Hill in Winchester on Saturday, with new and old faces returning to the scene of the protest from 1992 to 94. But the rally was not just about nostalgia, but looking forward and protesting against government plans to begin new major road building in the countryside. Sian Berry of Campaign for Better Transport, who organised the rally, said, "The Twyford Down protest was a huge success, even though we can see the horrible damage it did to the countryside when the M3 was built. But it kick-started something special that prevented a lot more roads being built. We want to get across the message that going back to a large programme of road building is a massive step backwards. But if they try again, we will defeat them again." Michael Hamblett was one of the activists sent to prison for refusing to leave the site during the protests, but he said his 2-week stint behind bars was well worth it. Mr. Hamblett, 58, from Oxford, said, "I was the only one of us jailed in Winchester because I broke the injunction to stay off the land. The judge said to me he wouldn't jail me if I didn't go back to Twyford Down, but I said, if you go and have a look at what they are doing there, you will understand why I can't do that. I haven't been back there that often in 20 years. I came back and I felt sick at what I saw. What's been done here is horrendous. But everything we did and everything that happened was definitely worth it." Several people took direct action to prevent the road building, including a group of New Age travellers, the Dongas tribe, who lived on the land. Their camp was broken up by security guards in December 1992, and their protests were unable to stop the build, which was completed in 1994. Rebecca Lush Bloom, 40, of Warsash, was a Donga who lived on the site from September 1992 until the eviction night. She said, "It was a horrific experience and very violent. We were dragged through thorns and we were being kicked and punched and someone pulled out a clump of my hair. But it was worth it, and it is great to see so many young people here today, as we will be talking to them about the campaign and how it helped and how they can help in the future. We definitely achieved something. There were 600 roads that were supposed to be started before our campaign, and by the time the Labour government came to power, there were only 150 left, so we decimated the road plans within 5 years. And this is accompanied by a photograph of protesters. It says, protesters mark the 20th anniversary of the battle to save Twyford Down from the bulldozers. So this is a protest of people now.
Business partners aim to reach out to the community. Winchester saw the Big Society in action when a group of businesses came together to help children. The Business Collective, a traders' network run by Adrienne Marsden, brought together Sainsbury's, Jamie Oliver's Union Jack's Restaurant, the Trinity Centre, and learning disability charity The Boaz Project to put on a special life skills cookery class for the young carers of Winchester. The young carers were able to learn some useful skills from Tom Barney, a chef at Union Jack's in Winchester, in the kitchen at the Trinity Centre. Sutton Scotney-based Boaz donated a range of fresh produce, including onions, garlic, squash and raspberries. The cupboard ingredients came from Winchester Young Carers corporate sponsor, Sainsbury's. Chef Mr Barney led the children in creating a three-course meal. Ben Hogbin, manager of the Young Carers, said, "This was quite an experience for a young person to have someone who works at Jamie Oliver's restaurant come to work with them, and it meant they could do something most other people don't have the chance to do." Kate Donnelly, manager of Union Jack's, said, "The business collective approached us and we really wanted to do it. Jamie is really into doing things for charity and the community, so it was really good that we could do something to help our community. It was a bit ready, steady, cook for me, though, as I didn't know what ingredients I would be using until I got there." Ms. Marden said, "I can't thank everyone enough for engaging in what might appear to be a rather unusual idea. I just hope everyone came away feeling that they had made a difference."
NHS heroes still flying high after 5 years. National Air Ambulance Week highlights work of vital service. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has flown close to 4,000 missions in the 5 years it has been helping to save people's lives. After a monumental effort to raise the funds needed to get the helicopter off the ground, supporters have continued to ensure it stays airborne by raising £110,000 each and every month just to keep it operational. It is the work of the air ambulance, its crew and fundraisers that was the focus of the first ever National Air Ambulance Week, staged in the hope of showing the public just how crucial the service is. Although there is no way of knowing how many lives the service has saved, anecdotally there have been many occasions where critically injured patients have subsequently been told by doctors they owe their life to the air ambulance. The helicopter has proved invaluable in reaching those patients who are most in need of urgent treatment, in many cases delivering a doctor to the scene to administer treatment that normally would have to wait until the hospital. Sherry Williams-Ellen, charity manager for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, said, "The way we look at it is that the helicopter brings the hospital to the patient. When a doctor is on board, they are able to administer the sort of treatment someone in a land ambulance would receive on arrival at hospital. They can anaesthetise, secure airways, and basically have them in a more stable condition before they even get to accident and emergency. This inevitably improves the positive outcome for the patient. Not only does the air ambulance improve the chances of survival, but also gives the best chance of recovery by delivering the casualty to whichever hospital can best care for their injury. In the 5 years it has been in service, the helicopter has been known to fly as far afield as Swansea for the specialist care the patient needs. Head injury patients are generally taken to Southampton as the regional lead, while burn and spinal victims are usually transported to Salisbury's Odstock Hospital. A helicopter has been known to deploy as many as 10 times in a day, usually in the summer when the holidays are in full swing, the roads are busy and the South Coast becomes a mecca for holidaymakers. Excuse me. Along with the missions it carries out during daylight hours, when it is allowed to land at any reasonable landing site, it also conveys patients between hospitals with helipads at night. Based at its Thruxton Air Base, the team comprises a pilot and two highly skilled paramedics who are on a six-week rota secondment from South Central Ambulance Service. It is the funding of the air ambulance that is perhaps the greatest challenge, as without any government subsidy, it is solely down to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Charity to keep the aircraft in the skies. At a cost of £3,600 a day to run, the 8-strong staff work flat out on the ground to raise the profile and subsequent funds.
And now an obituary for Major General Paul Bray. Major General Paul Bray enjoyed a highly successful army career and later immersed himself in community life in Winchester, his adopted hometown. He'd been inspired to join the army when he watched a promotional film on a night out. He had not enjoyed studying at Purbrook Park School in Portsmouth, but when he took the entrance exam for Sandhurst, he gained the highest mark of all candidates on one paper. He was commissioned into the Royal Artillery in 1956. From the Royal Academy Sandhurst, his early career embraced a time of national service, the Cold War and the Cyprus conflict. As Brigadier, he became, in 1985, Station Commander and Chief Paymaster of Worthy Down, where he set up the Corps Computer Centre. He was an innovator who moved the Corps forwards. He proudly marched his regiment through Winchester to gain the freedom of the city in 1988. In 1989, now a Major General, he was made Paymaster-in-Chief, the highest position in the Corps, which he led with great integrity, care and intellect, skills he needed when he faced the challenge to form the Adjutant General's Corps. He was awarded a CB following this successful transition. His final years of service were as Honorary Colonel Commandant of the Adjutant General Corps. Retiring at 56, he entered the world of academia, reading politics, philosophy and history at the University of Southampton. With his first class honours degree, he applied to complete an MA in Historical Studies. He published two books and contributed to A Millennium of Archdeacons and maintained his link with the Army by contributing to the third edition of the Iron Division, The History of the Third Division, 1809 to 2000. His love of history led him to become chairman of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. He was involved in the Flower Festival, became editor of the Friends magazine, and fulfilled duties as a sidesman. Alongside this, he was a governor and then chairman of governors at King's School, Winchester, a position he maintained until his death. He was quietly and modestly brilliant, obtaining more pleasure when encouraging others to succeed. This included his own children, who he mentored to achieve success in the police, education and theatre.
Future of Leisure Centre uncertain. The future of Winchester's biggest leisure facility remains uncertain following a meeting by civic bosses last Thursday. The River Park Leisure Centre is in need of major renovation, but council chiefs are still unable to say whether the facility will be demolished and replaced or whether it will simply be updated. Addressing the full council, Councillor Stannard explained that analysis was still being carried out to assess the state of the current site. Council leader Keith Wood said, "We're investigating what Winchester actually needs, Until we work that out, it's difficult to say what facility we should have. The Cabinet received support from Councillor Harry Verney, who said, "We have skipped on maintenance over the years. It's important that we get the answers right this time, even if it takes a long time." The point was echoed by Councillor Martin Todd, who said, "I know that the facilities at River Park are under the most strain are the learner pool and the space for the things like Zumba and dance classes. Emma Back of Winchester Fit for the Future, a campaign group lobbying for better sports facilities in the city, said, "We have been trying to highlight this issue for a while, and we have known for several years it would be crunch time after the Olympics. The increase in demand is obvious, and there is a need to get it going." Civic Chief said there would be an opportunity to discuss options for the River Park on October the 15th, when a conference will be held at the Guildhall.
Mayor's Fund hands out cheques to charities. A former mayor of Winchester has raised more than £32,000 for local charities. Councillor Barry Lipscomb presented Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, the Rifles Care for Casualties Appeal, and the Winchester Cancer Research Trust with cheques last week. Each charity received just over £10,000 from funds raised during Councillor Lipscomb's mayoral year. Councillor Lipscomb said, "Each of these charities has a special place in my heart, and I am absolutely delighted to have been able to help their vital work. The cash will allow the WCRT to purchase a new plasma blade for the breast unit at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, which enables bloodless surgery. Richard Rainsbury, consultant breast surgeon at RHCH, said, "I would like to thank Barry Lipscomb, his fundraising team, and the hundreds of generous donors who have raised this magnificent sum of money." Lieutenant Colonel Mike Smith, casualty officer of the Rifles, said, "Our thanks also go to all the members of the Mayor's Charity Committee who have been such a support to us. The Care for Casualties appeal emanates from the desire of the Rifles Regimental family to support our casualties from the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts whenever they may need it, at any time, for the rest of their lives." Air Ambulance trustee Jonathan Mosley added, "I can assure you the donation will be spent wisely by the Air Ambulance in providing the very special life-saving service to all the communities in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight." Councillor Lipscomb also thanked members of his charity committee, along with sponsors Den Plan and Rathbones.
7-day-a-week parcel service. A new parcel collection service has opened in Winchester, offering arrival service to the post office. Collect Plus will be based at the Bridge Shop in Bridge Street. The delivery and returns service aims to take on the post office by giving online shoppers the choice of picking up purchases at a time most convenient to them, as the outlet is open 7 days a week. Recent research revealed the importance of convenient delivery to online shoppers. Over half, 54%, said that they would be more likely to shop with a retailer that offered delivery to a convenient collection point, thereby removing the risk of missed delivery. This rose to two-thirds, 65%, among the under-30s. The new outlet will also provide an alternative option for parcel senders in Winchester, allowing them to drop off packages instead of having to wait in for their package to be picked up from home. Collect Plus has expanded its number of participating shops in the past 6 months and is already a third the size of the post office's network. Unlike the post office, the majority of shops offering Collect Plus are open 7 days a week and for longer than traditional opening hours. Mark Lewis, chief executive of Collect Plus, said, "The people of Winchester deserve a convenient parcel service on their doorstep. The opening of this new Collect Plus outlet in Winchester means that people can pick up or send their parcels 7 days a week at a time convenient to them. This is something important to those with busy work schedules and family commitments. Founded in 2009, the service is a joint venture between PayPoint, the leading retail payment network, and Yodel, UK's leading parcel delivery company.
Winchester-bound illegal immigrants halted. Six Winchester-bound illegal immigrants have been captured in France, hiding in a lorry, the border force said. Its officers found the vehicle at the port of Calais, waiting to cross to the UK. The Romanian-registered lorry, heading to an undisclosed business on the Moorside Road, Winnell, was searched at around 5:20 a.m. on Wednesday, September the 5th. A detector dog, called Bouncer, was used, and the stowaways were found in a load of tyres. They were handed over to the French police, and the vehicle was allowed to continue on to its destination. David Holt of Border Force said, "This incident shows why we base Border Force staff in France, to stop would-be illegal immigrants before they can reach the UK. Our strong presence in French ports, like Calais, helps protect the whole of the UK from people attempting to enter the country illegally."
Residents can help shape the future of their town. Neighbourhood plan to be drawn up for Bishop's Waltham. The people of Bishop's Waltham are to have a direct say in shaping the future of the town. A neighbourhood plan is being drawn up which will decide future development in the parish, and at a meeting on Saturday, residents can contribute. That's on October the 6th, that's tomorrow. Barry Nicholson, chairman of the Parish Council's Planning, Environment and Highways Committee, said, "The main issue about the neighbourhood plan is that the public must be involved. The emphasis is very much on their involvement. We have to be ahead of the game on this. Over the next 20 years, Bishop's Waltham, under the Winchester District Local Plan, Part 1, needs to provide more homes, greater employment opportunities and improved educational facilities. The final plan will either form part of the Winchester District Local Plan or will be subject to an independent examination followed by a local referendum. The final document will be legally binding, and up to 2031 all planning applications would need to conform to it. Neighbourhood plans have come about through the Coalition's Localism Act 2011 and are billed as a new right for communities. Last month, the Hampshire Chronicle reported how city councillors approved the Stanmore planning framework, which will shape regeneration in that neighbourhood over the next 10 years. A similar exercise in Alresford caused controversy. Town councillors suggested radical proposals, including relocating the Dean Industrial Estate and Perrin's School, and new homes on farmland off Sun Lane. A public meeting was critical of the plans, which are still being discussed.
Home glass collections ruled out. Pleas for glass recycling collections from residents' homes have been dismissed by civic chiefs on cost grounds. It follows concerns raised at a meeting last Thursday by Liberal Democrats about the falling number of bottle bank sites in Winchester. The number of sites in the city is now down to 80, compared to 83 in April last year. Ruling Tories in the City Council said current demand was satisfied. However, Councillor Dominic Hiscock, who is an advocate of glass collection from people's homes, said the number of bring sites were insufficient. City Council leader Keith Wood said a home collection scheme would cost £200,000, plus another £200,000 for a special collection van. Money, he said, the council did not have.
University is praised in Parliament. The high employment rate of Winchester University teacher training graduates has been raised in Parliament. Winchester and Chandos Ford MP Steve Brine said, "I'm a huge supporter of the university, which we are so lucky to have in the city, and I wanted to remind the Minister that 96% of full-time teacher training graduates for 2010-11 had gone into employment, which is testament to the way the courses are structured and the ultimate quality of the graduates it produces. Higher Education Minister David Willetts said the government was introducing the requirement that universities release the information on the percentage of graduates who are in work after 6 months, course by course. It will allow the prospective students to assess their performance on likely employability.
Supermarkets food poverty drive. Winchester supermarkets are urging residents to help fight food poverty. Sainsbury's in Middlebrook Street and Badger Farm are holding a food drive over this weekend, October the 6th and 7th, as part of the National Million Meal Appeal. The appeal, in its second year, is run in partnership with hunger charity Fair Share and delivered 1.2 million meals to 700 charities and community projects last year, with Winchester residents providing enough for 4,000 meals. Sainsbury's Community Affairs Manager Andy White said, "We had such an overwhelming response from our customers to last year's initiative, and we're excited to be working with Fair Share on the second Million Meal Appeal. Customers can donate items from the Million Meal Appeal shopping list of long life products, including tinned goods, dried pasta, pasta sauce, rice, tea, and instant coffee. The items are purchased as normal and then placed in the collection box after checkout. Customers shopping on Sainsbury's online can also choose to make a £1 donation until October the 9th.
Runners get set for a Clarendon Marathon. More than 1,000 runners are expected to take part in Winchester Rotary's Clarendon Marathon this weekend. The club has teamed up with its Salisbury counterpart to put on the event on Sunday, October the 7th, which will see 1,100 people run from Wyvern College Salisbury to King's School in Winchester. It is both clubs' major fundraising event of the year and the first time they have organised it themselves. Roger Walker, one of the Winchester organisers, said, "We are very pleased to be involved in this iconic marathon event. We will have 10 welcome stations along the Clarendon Way, which are being organised by local charities and organisations, all of which will benefit from the day. The first runner is expected in Winchester at around 1:15 p.m. and will be welcomed by local runner Louise Damon. The race is sponsored by Breeze 107.2 FM, Winchester solicitor Shenton's, Southampton Sports Store Up and Running, and Alton Sports."
Another top chef coming to the city. Winchester has lured another celebrity TV chef and real food campaigner to the city. Hugh Fernley Whittingstall has signed a lease to take over the historic council-owned Abbey Mill off Colebrook Street. His River Cottage canteen and deli is now set to open in about a year's time. The City Council has confirmed it has agreed lease terms on Abbey Mill in Winchester's Abbey Gardens with River Cottage canteen and deli. Like the two other River Cottage restaurants, it will also offer food-orientated courses. The City Council owns the listed building and has been looking for a new tenant since moving its own engineering department and vacating it as office space for a few years. Rob Love, Managing Director of River Cottage, in a statement prompted by Hampshire Chronicle inquiries, said, "River Cottage is pleased to have agreed terms with Winchester City Council on the Abbey Mill building, subject to planning and licensing approvals. Our first priority is to create a dialogue with residents and the local community to share our ambitions and intentions, and we look forward to meeting with them soon. Letters have been sent to local people living in the Colebrook Street area." The news will add another famous name to restaurants in the city. Raymond Blanc and Jamie Oliver both have restaurants in the city. The Black Rat has a Michelin star. And the city was the first location for the Hotel du Vin in 1994. River Cottage says its new venture would add vibrancy to the city and offer employment and training opportunities and opportunities for local food producers. It is hoped that a planning application will be submitted before Christmas, and if successful, building work will begin early in 2013 for completion next autumn.
Council-owned land ripe for new homes. Anyone living near city council-owned land in Winchester should expect to see councillors there eyeing it for new homes. That was the message sent out by Tory housing boss Ian Tait last week. He said, "Perhaps I should say to every resident in Winchester, if you live near council land, you should be expecting councillors to be there making appraisals." Councillor Tait, the portfolio holder for new homes delivery, told the council that the Cabinet is pushing ahead with plans for 70 new council homes across the district. He revealed that plans had been submitted for 5 family homes at Itchen Abbas, and that if permission were granted, work could begin as early as February next year. Councillor Tait also confirmed that work on homes at Deva Close in Micheldeva would begin on October the 22nd, and that plans for new homes in Bourne Close, Otterbourne, had now been submitted. But Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd said he was unhappy at the way the programme was being communicated to the public. "Does Ian Tait agree that residents are right to be angry about this?" Councillor Todd said. "There is opposition in Abbots Barton for proposal for new council homes on grassland off Dyson Drive." Councillor Tait responded that the development strategy and the scheme approval and communication process demonstrated his commitment to transparency. It also emerged during the council meeting that community consultation with residents at Abbots Barton is due to begin shortly. The Hampshire Chronicle has recently reported how angry residents there had formed an action group in response to the plans. The plans are all part of the council's new homes delivery programme, which aims to increase affordable housing in Winchester with a target of 300 new homes over the next 10 years.
St Bede celebrates new extension. Centenary celebrations for St Bede Primary School in Winchester reached their climax with the opening of a new extension. The centenary extension will provide much-needed classroom space for the overstretched primary school. At the opening last Thursday, Chairman of the School Governors, Dominic Hiscock, told the children present, "Things like these buildings don't just happen. Someone has to make a decision, and so we have a lot of people to thank for this." New classrooms were a hit with the pupils, who took turns at the ceremony to share what they liked best about the building. The view and the colour of the toilets being recurring themes. Sabine Bonica Bruce, whose daughter Helena is in year 5, said, "It's quite a change. When my eldest started, there were 45 in each year group. Now there are 60. So it's just great to have the space for them. The school have had to work very hard to make space for the children." Deputy head teacher David Medcalf read out the list of contents for a time capsule that would be stored away for the next 100 years. Among the items were pictures of the head boy and head girl, a copy of the Hampshire Chronicle, and a cast of head teacher Louise Fitzpatrick's handprint. Proceedings culminated in the cutting of the ribbon by Mr. Hiscock and a blessing from the Reverend Cliff Bannister. Mrs. Fitzpatrick described the occasion as a very special moment, and this is accompanied by a photograph of a group of children holding the time capsule and a little insert showing the new extension.
Busy beavers pick up a whole heap of litter. Winchester Beaver Scouts have been living up to their name, collecting litter in a city park. As part of their global challenge badge, the 11th Winchester Beaver Scouts have been busy on a litter pick at Dean Park in Week. The youngsters were surprised by the sheer volume of rubbish they found, and afterwards it was sorted and as much as possible was recycled. And I also have a lovely colour photograph here of the youngsters standing around a large piece of plastic on which has been heaped this huge pile of rubbish, and they look extremely happy.
Plan to strike up the band. Proposals for a bandstand for Winchester have been met with a lukewarm response by city councillors. At a meeting last Thursday, a proposal was put forward by portfolio holder for culture, Councillor Patricia Stallard, who said that Winchester lacked any such facility. However, members were cautious in supporting the venture. Councillor Stallard proposed that the council commences the commissioning of an art-designed portable bandstand, which could accommodate live performances from bands and arts groups. The bandstand would at times be situated in the cathedral close, but its design would mean it could be used at locations throughout the district. Councillor Stallard said she had consulted cathedral bosses about the suitability of such a facility and had their support. She said, "I would wish it to be showcasing the district as a home for the arts." But Councillor Kelsey Lerney expressed concern regarding funding of the project, insisting, "I would like an answer to my question of how much this would cost." Council leader Keith Wood conceded that costing had not been calculated at this stage, but said, "The bandstand would be a tremendous opportunity if we can make this work. I'm sorry if this has upset people. We have got to do something for residents, and this is going to be fun for people, and it's not going to cost a fortune."
Confusion over grant for town. People in Bishop's Waltham are in limbo over whether the town is to receive a cash injection to stimulate trade. Last week it was reported that the town had been awarded £10,000 as a consolation prize following an unsuccessful bid to be part of retail guru Mary Portis's High Street regeneration scheme. But by Monday, neither the Parish Council nor Winchester City Council, which would take receipt of the funds from central government and distribute them to Bishop's Waltham, had received any confirmation of the award. Parish Councillor Barry Nicholson said, "We believe we've been successful, but we only saw it on the BBC. We've received no confirmation from the government or from Winchester City Council." On Tuesday, Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury admitted he may have been responsible for the confusion. He said, "I think it's almost certain that the parish will get the grant, but I must hold up my hands and say I've been a bit premature. I will get confirmation as soon as I can. That will probably be October the 15th. After Bishop Waltham's bosses failed to secure the £100,000 Mary Portis grant, a second unsuccessful application for funding was made. The government then announced that providing they had the backing of the local MP, unsuccessful parishes could apply for a one-off £10,000 grant to boost their high streets. Councillor Nicholson said, "The town centre administrator would oversee marketing for the town with a view to boosting Bishop's Waltham's profile for business and tourism. We're looking to preempt any potential after effects that might arise from the Sainsbury's store."
Sporting summer of achievements. Hundreds of youngsters converged on Winchester Guildhall to celebrate a summer of outstanding achievements. National Citizen Service, NCS, graduates from across Hampshire came together along with Olympic gold-winning rower Alex Gregory on hand to show his support. Around 250 participants gathered in recognition of each other's achievements, giving presentations and sharing stories of challenges overcome and newfound skills. The programme, which has support from a range of celebrities, including survival expert Bear Grylls, is a government initiative aimed at promoting cohesion and responsibility in society, bringing young people from different backgrounds together. Mr. Gregory said, NCS gives young people the opportunities to develop skills above and beyond what they learn in the classroom. Teamwork, leadership, adventure. Plus, it encourages pride and responsibility. I would encourage anyone who missed out this summer to get involved this autumn during the October half term.
Peter Simmons College keeps raising the bar. Regularly featuring among the top colleges in national league tables, Peter Simmons College, Winchester, attracts day and boarding students from across Hampshire, Berkshire, Wiltshire, and as far afield as the Falkland Islands, all keen to benefit from the academic excellence, individual student care, and fantastic facilities available. Ofsted has recognised Peter Simmons again and again as an outstanding college, with this year's results being no exception. A 99% pass rate at A level, with 84.4% achieving A star to C. 43 students have taken up places at Oxbridge, one of the highest numbers from any school or college, state or independent, anywhere in the UK. Peter Simmons is about so much more than academic excellence, and it has an extensive activities programme, offering everything from pottery through to music video making. For many students, sport is also a key part of college life, and Simmons has a long sporting history and regularly achieves success in league, cup, county and national competitions. Peter Simmons Open Evenings, October the 17th to the 19th, are an ideal opportunity for Year 11 students and their parents to visit the college to find out more for September 2013 admissions. Staff and students will be available to talk about subjects, sports and recreational activities.
Grants help micro-businesses grow. Winchester City Council has introduced a new pilot scheme of grants to help develop and support micro-businesses based in the city. Businesses with up to 9 employees can apply for grants of up to £1,000 on items required to allow their business to grow. These might include purchases of IT equipment, website design, recruitment costs, help with relocation costs to expand the business, or anything else which is essential for developing a micro-business. Councillor Humby, Deputy Leader of Winchester City Council and Portfolio Holder for Strategic Planning, Economy, Tourism and Estates, said, "New micro-business development grants are one of a number of ways the Council is supporting businesses located in its district. Earlier in the year, we introduced improvements to help rural business with the planning process. We've also recently launched a new apprenticeship grant scheme to help young people starting apprenticeships." Alison Woods, Winchester City Council's Economy and Arts Development Manager, added, "Feedback from businesses has also indicated that they would like local government to reduce red tape, so we've tried to make the application process as straightforward as possible. This is a pilot scheme which will be reviewed at the end of the financial year. If it is successful, we hope we may be able to introduce the grants on a more permanent basis."
Wickham in the spotlight. Calling all Wickham residents. The Hampshire Chronicle will be publishing a feature on the village in the edition of October the 18th. The centrepiece will be a picture of local people to be taken by the Jubilee clock in the square on Saturday, October the 13th at 11 a.m. The photo call should only take around 5 to 10 minutes, and the more people there, the merrier. Anyone who would like to contribute ideas for the feature should contact reporter Wesley Rock on 01962 860836. 01962 860836.
Outstanding Playgroup. A Winchester playgroup is officially outstanding after 30 years of service. Stanmore St Luke's Playgroup secured Ofsted's top grade in an inspection earlier this year. Leader Sue Rose said, "This is the first time we have ever been outstanding. We have been good a few times, but I have been in charge for 30 years, and this is the culmination of that work. We have to make sure we continue to be, as that is the real challenge." Sue of Stanmore Lane added the success was down to her strong team of 4 staff and 8 volunteers. She said, "Teamwork has got us here. We have a really tight-knit team, and I have trained all the people who work for me, and I train myself to train others. We like to involve everyone here, from the parents to the grandparents, so we are a real community group." The playgroup currently has around 20 children and is based in St Luke's Church Centre in Mildmay Street. And there's a lovely, colourful, happy picture of about 15 small children with their carers.
So, with that very nice story, that concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Claire Craffreen.
Goodbye.
And Pam Tilbury.
Bye-bye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.